Welcome, everybody. Good Life Housing Partners. It is episode 135. Today is Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. And we are here at the downtown Los Angeles headquarters of GLHPV. And we're well into the year. We're halfway through January. It's flown by. I think everyone is still seemingly waiting for a Fed announcement, for NMHC, for I think people are just waiting to see more green shoots or more things positive in the market, which I think makes a ton of sense. I mean, I think we're starting to see a little bit of transactions, probably a little bit more than we saw maybe a year ago. I don't have the actual data, but it feels that way at least. Where does this find you, Mr. Fong?
The same. Happy New Year again to all our listeners. I think on the last pod, we talked about how the jobs report came in, and in December, you know, the jobs were a little higher. We added 216,000 jobs, a little more than everyone expected. And so, again, it's sort of the normal dance we did most of 2023, where we took two steps forward, one step back. And so we ended the year with a little present from the Fed, as we talked about. Now, I mean, everyone's all excited and hoping, or a lot of people were hoping and predicting we would get the first bunch of rate cuts.
Yeah, March. I don't know. Actually, it's funny that you say excited. I've now talked to like maybe a few dozen people in the last 2 weeks, and I don't get the sense that people are excited.
Well, no, I think the jobs report, and the other thing I was going to say that sort of dampened a little bit is CPI came out for December, and CPI from December climbed 4% year over year, which was higher than we were hoping to trend down below 3%. And so November was 3.1%. So we kind of ticked up a little bit, just like on the job side, we added a little more jobs. So once again, kind of showing a decent economy, also showing price growth still kind of up there. Price is still up there. So now a lot more people are less confident that March will be the rate cut that everyone was hoping for. So now they're thinking, okay, maybe it's going to be in the
second quarter. I think it was last year about this time or somewhere, you know, we were getting ready to go to NMHC and ever all these like wheels were turning. And I remember coming off of that in February of 23. And the term that I heard a lot was muted optimism. Like it was like people were optimistic, but they didn't want to be too optimistic because there was, you know, likely a recession to happen. And now that recession hasn't happened. And what we're seeing is I think one of the things that's, you know, again, I'm just seeing what I see people doing. This is all anecdotal. So this is all just my own primary view is I think what has happened is there is a number of people, of consumers in this economy that have said, okay, I am out of the home buying environment. I'm out. I can't afford a house. I can't find a house. Even if I find a house, I can't afford it. I can't afford the payments. I can't afford the down, whatever it is. And we've always been a 66% nation in terms of home ownership. And I think there is like, I think for every point, it's like 1.2 million households or whatever it is. And that is starting to go closer to 65. And I think it ends even lower than that. And there's a portion, that little portion, while it might only be 1 or 2 percentage points, that is effectively said, we're out, or we're good where we are. We're not new home buyers. We're not second home buyers. We're not home buyers, period. And we're going to go consume. And that could be just like more trips to Applebee's in a week. That could be time to go to Disneyland again this year. It could be a variety of things. But most of these folks are, if they're in a house, they're in a low mortgage. If they have savings, they've been earning 5-6%. They've been earning the highest savings they've ever earned in their lives, 5-6%. And they've got money. And they really don't have places to spend it. So at least in terms of long-term investments like a home, they're not like real estate people like, let me go buy 50 units or 100 units or 300 units. They're just spenders at this point. And I think that is one of the last year, the hidden risk was SVB, Silicon Valley Bank. Hidden risk, no idea.
Like just came out.
Just came out of nowhere. Like within a week or 2 weeks, it was like, you know, it was fine. Then it wasn't. Then it was gone. And I think the hidden risk this year is starting to show that there is a cohort of people that have like would be, you know, home buyers, savers, have become like really just like thoroughbred spenders.
Well, I did see an article that kind of agrees with you in some regards, in the sense of
I love me some agreement.
Most of the homeowners, a lot of the homeowners or the would-be sellers are baby boomers. You know, my generation or older.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys, a lot of those guys refinance when rates were low.
You don't look like a baby boomer. Exactly. That's a you don't think like one. How about that? Okay.
A lot of those guys are just at the stage in life now where they locked in this cheap debt. You know, so they're good. Where there's not the buying is sort of the millennials and the I forget what they're called underneath them. Millennial Z's or whatever they're
Gen Z
and all that, and so Zoomers. those groups are the ones heading into the prime sort of house buying years, but number one, I think there's now a trend they're kind of used to being, or at least they're less of the old fashioned notion of I gotta have a home, the American dream. You know, I'm cool with living in apartments, and I'm also cool with living in apartments because of hybrid work and all this. So they're also used to, not necessarily living in. I have to be at an X housing market. And then the other big factor obviously is the interest rates. They're so high now. And a lot of guys say doesn't make sense for them. They don't want to borrow money at such high rates. The effects of COVID over student loan repayments back, all that stuff. So I do think, that was sort of the argument that I saw in the article about how like there won't be a lot of transactions. On the one hand, you see the optimists saying, okay, hopefully there's rate cuts.
Yeah.
Rates will start to trickle down. We'll finally start to see a lot more. 2024 is going to be a huge year. Yeah. A lot more home sales because of pent-up demand, all this. But on the other hand, I question that demand kind of because of the composition of the marketplace, where you got the sellers who probably can afford to hold out a little bit for their price and don't want to sell. You know, and then you also have the fundamentals of not enough supply anyway because of the homes we're building and the amount of homes we built. And so – and you got the pressure on the buyers not being able to finance. And so I do think that side, I think that scenario is probably more likely to continue, like what you're saying, what you call this sort of hidden risk.
Well, I don't know if it's a risk because it's not like they're going to, like, I don't think this 1, 2% of potential home buyers that are now like, big time spenders are going to crash the economy or.
No, they're not risking that.
So I don't know if like, but my terming of risk is not like probably the best term. But these are people that are definitely going, at least from what I know of modern economic history, they are going in a very opposite direction than what has been sort of the norm of American society is to go buy a home, and that's the dream.
Yeah,
they're just
is it a permanent trend? What kind of trend is it? Really?
I don't know.
So that's
really I don't know, but it's definitely. I mean, some of these just really smart economic folks would be able to really opine on this, but I don't know that that's really happened in U.S. history before, where you have this really odd mix of things happening at once, where interest rates are high, savings rates are high, and because we just have total lack of inventory, the actual home buying market is like essentially stopped.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a unique situation. I mean, similarly, I saw an interesting article that talked about an office in the market. Some people were suggesting, or at least optimists were thinking, that doom loop and all the other stuff we talk about, urban apocalypse, that's maybe that's all overblown, now that there's some people going back to work, but they think, okay, people are being forced a little bit more back to work, all that COVID stimulus is gone, interest rates hopefully will cut down. And they think, office won't be as bad. But then on the other hand, I think that's just optimist, in my view, my opinion. You have, Scott Rex, our CEO of RXR, who thinks 2024 is really, he thinks this is the year where it's basically, it's quote unquote, it's game time. Time to settle up with the lenders, time to really figure out where your value is.
An office.
And so because looking at the final statistics, the office vacancy rate overall for the U.S. is at a record high in 2023 at a record high.
Yeah.
You know, they forecast this year's going to be worse. It's going to be high.
Yeah.
So you know, to me, it seems like it's not going to get better. I don't believe in where these people thinking that people will go back to the office. I don't think the interest rate, even if there are cuts, which I do think they will happen, I don't think that's going to like somehow save office in any way. I think sort of that downward spiral. The other thing the optimists were saying, which I thought was a little too optimistic, was they were thinking that, well, in times of crisis, you know, when you kind of get to a certain bottom point, they were looking at in the 90s when the office market had similar problems back then. They said that they think that the parties involved, you got companies, you got landlords, you got lenders, municipalities, all these people who have vested interests, they finally start to coalesce and come together and realize there's a problem. We got to work together and solve this. You know, maybe kumbaya, I don't know. But I don't, I don't know. Is that really going to solve these problems? Because I think there's more fundamental issues at stake. So I don't necessarily buy that. I just think things, you know, fundamentally changed, you know, in that market. It really, I think the days of
office. I actually think it's like, very unique.
I think some office will make
it. No, but if you zoom out a little bit, you're getting pretty into like the optimism case of office. But I don't know if there's ever been an asset class where there was so much just question of whether it was going to survive or come back, or there was like a real cheerleading section. I don't remember like when malls started becoming less interesting that like all these mall owners were like, oh, it's coming back. Like, I don't remember that. Like, I don't think it happened. Like, I don't remember like, you know, I don't remember that happening. I don't know, maybe I missed it, but I don't remember that happening. I remember like, you know, when apartments were less in vogue at the GFC, I remember a bunch of people saying, oh yeah, these mall people need apartments to live in. Don't worry, they're coming back. I don't remember that. I don't remember this cheerleading squad for apartments or power malls or any of these things, unless you do.
Yeah, no, it's
this is a new phenomenon.
I think it's. I agree. That's why I don't buy that argument that the optimists are pushing. I agree. Like, yeah, if you look at it historically, yeah, office. I mean, look back. Yeah, the office has its ups and downs. There's floods. You know, the Japanese lost all that money overpaying for office, but. But then you also had a lot of supply, too.
You had a ton of supply. And so, I think you still, that's the problem with office, is you just have so much supply left. Like, you just have tons of supply of office here. I mean, look at LA. Like, this is a 20% vacancy market. Like, what real estate class can you operate at 20% vacancy?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're out of business for the most part.
Right.
Like, you just can't operate it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And now we're at, you know, 25, 30, 35. I mean, the one interesting thing I saw, this struck me a little bit, was Core Trust, which is like one of the biggest office owners in the nation, which recently was foreclosed on a deal around the corner from here, had one of their buildings go to auction, which is in Pasadena. And that deal traded, you know, the last decade in 17 or 18 for $250 million in Pasadena. And they went to auction at 118. They get a bidder at 118.
Yeah.
They didn't get bidder at 60. They got no bidders.
No bidders.
Oh. Zero bidders. And now it goes back. And that to me, and that's a suburban, like a somewhat suburban office market, which is theoretically better than, you know, CBD downtown. It's not as, I'm definitely not Century City. Everyone wants to be Century City, but it's definitely not that. But it's still a good little enclave. But for a reason, even at half price, probably like, you know, this is, you know, a literally like pennies on the dollar, zero interest.
So what do you think happened? I mean, historically, yeah. Everyone always says real estate's cyclical, right? So obviously we're in a down cycle for office. So is there, but at the same time, you know, at least for the period we've been in real estate 20 years, you know, we've seen it up and down. We've seen guys who have done super well in office, and, you know, Arden comes to mind when I think of Dick Zeidman and Arden Reed. Now I remember back in the 90s and early 2000s, they had all these huge holdings and then they sold it all to G Capital, made a ton of money. And, but now I look at GE, then later sold to Blackstone and they've written it all off now. So I'm like, wow, the timing was good. And so I'm thinking, no, but are we in a cycle? Is it just going to, it's just a deeper cycle, you know?
But what propels everyone back to office? Like, why do you, if you live in Los Angeles?
I'm not saying disagree. I guess that's what I keep asking.
Are we overreacting? What propels people back in Los Angeles back to office? I don't know what it is.
Maybe new job industries. I don't know that need the use.
I don't know. I thought the one thing that could happen was you had a recession. Companies were like, we don't have the same level of productivity because we're not in office together. And then you would have this like chorus, this effect of like, we all need to be back in the office to get the economy going again. Now that has not happened, and the economy is doing fine, and unemployment's super low, and like
people's savings are super high. The disconnect in the past, then people did come back.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if that was ever like, because this idea, this notion that you don't need to be in the office anymore is very new.
Well, that part.
This is like for the last 100 years, you had to be in the office. Well,
that's the fundamental change.
That's the change. I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle. I don't know how you do that, especially. I think you can do it in like smaller economies where there's less traffic, there's less commute times, there's just less stuff you have to deal with. In places like here, like, it is hard to get people to come in more than a few times a week. You've got to be hell of compelling to do it. I don't know. I literally do not know.
But I guess it goes to the big question.
Let me ask you a question. I don't know one person. Literally, I do not know one person that is in the office more than 3 days a week. In their office. I cannot tell you one person. I know they exist.
They exist. Like in New York City, I'm sure there's somebody
best. But I don't know one person in Los Angeles that goes to an office more than 3 days a week. I know a handful that probably do four. We're four. But that's you and I. But I don't know many more beyond that. Like, it's down to a hand. No. That gets in more than four times a week. Yeah. It gets into four.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, like, what will happen to office the future.
I think it's really tough. Yeah. I think it's super damn tough. Because especially places like LA where there's still, like, legit commute times to get to these offices. Yeah. And you start, you know, and as long as unemployment remains low, office will continue to suffer.
Sure.
They're correlated. Yeah. They're not meant to be correlated, but they're correlated. Because as long as the job economy is strong and people have jobs to go to, the risk of not going to the office is very low.
Or unless there's just some new...
Unless there's something brand new that we don't know about.
Or something that comes
out. Yeah, listen. If you're in biotech and you got to test samples, you're in like... I mean, the one place that it sort of has worked is in financial services where they're like, you're dealing with customer data that's very sensitive. You can't do that at your home anymore. Hard stop. You can't even do that on your personal phone anymore. You need two phones. Hard stop. We will not. We're putting an end to that. And they did it very quietly. They did it and it's done. And those folks, I know people. Like you said, I know people in Europe that are in there 4 days a week. But in Los Angeles, I don't, because we're not financial services city.
Yeah, that makes sense. The other, just switching to a different topic. Another trend I saw a Wall Street Journal article about was, these big national chains. A lot of retailers are moving out. You know, we talked about the mall, we closed mall
down. Crazy.
But a lot of them, they talked about the trend of even these national chains now that they were in the enclosed malls. Like just a couple examples, like Bath and Body Works or Foot Locker.
Yeah.
You know, Foot Locker by 2026 wants to lose 50% of their stores outside of the mall into shopping centers. The move is
into experiential.
There's some kind of outdoor or just a shopping center. And it's interesting.
What do you mean by like retail?
Grocery anchored shopping center or some other center. Because a couple of reasons. One, they're saying because of the huge jump in online shopping, right? They have data now about where people live and where
people actually shop.
And they also, so they feel customers prefer, which is somewhat true.
Yeah.
They prefer, well, I want to be efficient. I want to go in and I want to park in this huge
parking garage. And then I'm in the wrong side of the mall.
Exactly. I just want to know. I know that little shopping center has my
retailer
I need.
I can see where I need to be.
Yeah, I go in and get what I want, get out. And also, because of online shopping has increased this bigger trend, I can do returns there.
Yeah.
And so I can just go in and out. Very efficient. I just want efficient. So the data is supporting it. And so these national chains, along with jewelers and other groups, especially retailers, they're all starting to exit us out of these malls. Other than the super high end, whatever ones that are, you know, that survive, but most of them all. So the further now, you know, and I think that trend of convenience, I agree with that one. That one I see. That's not gonna reverse. Like, we're not all gonna say like, oh yeah, I want to go park in that.
Yeah. And then those high end ones, it's just as an additional point. Because I've seen this. When you go to buy your running shoe or your Jordans, even, you just go buy it. Or you get it online, you return it, whatever, and it's a quick transaction to everything you just said. If you go to these high-end malls with like the Gucci and the Tiffany and all that high-end stuff,
Louis Vuitton,
it is a much longer
experience. It's a longer visit.
Yeah. And there is often, I've seen this, I've literally walked in during the holiday season in Gucci, and there's like people sipping champagne there, it's like, you know, sparkling water being moved around, there's like a whole situation, it's like a little party going on in there. And I think that is part of the experience of buying that four or five, whatever, how many thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I can't see going to the mall for anything, unless it's, you know, a one of a kind, or was there some super sale that was so attractive? That would be the only thing that I could see.
I don't even know if I would do that, because that would feel crowded.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. That's the only reason I would brave the crowd. I could see people wanting to brave the crowd, because some people like
true
the crowd line atmosphere. But maybe that's like.
But those are deal gets.
As the producer Jason types would say, those are drops.
Yes, that's the drop. Yeah, I'm not in the drop.
New Kanye world thing. And so if you're in that world, I can see you might want to go to that.
No, that's true.
But
that's
I could also see you. So you want that part. But I could also see, yeah, you prefer the convenience. It's definitely more efficient from the retailer standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Then you can really, you know, satisfy your customer, figure out their needs and preferences.
And just tailor stop recording. Yeah, and you're very visible from the street, from the parking lot. You're like, oh, I'm just going right there.
Yeah.
And that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, so that trend, I thought, okay, that could be, you know, like you said, the office, I'm still not certain. I don't know. That's still a murky crystal ball for me.
Well, it's so large. Yeah. These giant buildings that literally now it is pretty clear that very few of them are actually, you know, they're mostly obsolete if they're not office. And this idea of converting them to anything outside of office is like zero. It's impossible.
But it'll be interesting to see, like, okay, now I do think what Rex was saying is true. All these loans are coming due. All these things, some deals are going to have to be made. Some valuations will be established, like some of the deals we talked about. Then it'll be interesting to see, okay, now what are those guys who bought it do?
Yeah.
And how will they handle it? You know, as the market then works its way through. So that'll be interesting to see.
What'll be interesting is in certain markets, the office is such a fundamental part of the economy, like New York. Mm-hmm. Like in so many different, it's so layered in, like the value of that office real estate, the people that are working there, the amount of business they bring to the surrounding area, the whole Manhattan. Like there is such, and this the vibrancy it provides. There's all these intangibles that are harder to calculate, but it's such a part of the fabric. Like it's like taking the tires off the car to some degree. You're going to have to do it, and the city's going to push it, and like it's going to be this collective effort. But I think in places like LA, this gets harder. Like this is way more complicated.
Yeah.
Here, like this is complicated.
This downtown office is
good. I think where we're sitting is it may be one of the epicenters of where, you know, it's going to be really hard to figure this one out.
Yeah. Be interesting to see what happens.
Because the other thing that's happened here that I don't know, I'm sure somebody's written about this, but the one thing that's happened here is most of the office that could be converted to apartments has been converted.
Yeah.
And there's already that ordinance is well established.
Yeah.
And whatever was made sense to do is, I assume, done.
Yeah.
Like there's very little that hasn't been done now.
So that's what
so what's left?
These guys have bought like the Aon building.
These yeah,
it's gonna be interesting.
It's gonna be super interesting.
What do they do?
They got mine. They might want GLHB over there.
So we don't need space.
Well, we don't.
Anyway, so
I'm poaching us over there.
So I found a new term that I thought I'd
bring it on.
New term,
I like new terms.
Criticized loans. There's a phrase the lenders use. They call it criticized multifamily loans. What are criticized loans are loans basically with early indicators of credit stress or potential default. And they're identified by banks based on different internal risk ratings that the banks give. Apparently, banks have the secret little code, little ranking system from 1 to 9. And you score above a 6, then you're considered criticized, meaning potential you may default in the future. So in terms of all these multifamily loans that some are refinancing, they're due for refinancing, or maybe some markets where there's a lot of supply. Guess which city has the highest amount of criticized multifamily loans?
My guess, you know, I would say that this would be a city that is like a really an emerging city out of the pandemic, where values probably went up faster because rents were going up so quickly. So values actually went up in a more of an extreme pace. So I would get, I would say like somewhere in Florida, like Miami, but it's not Miami. I know it's not Miami.
Because
demand is too heavy in Miami. It's too strong. Yeah. But I'd say like maybe the Carolinas, because this is the first time I've seen it this last few weeks, where you've seen some transactions on the multifamily end trade at or below loan value. And these were East Coast assets. These were Carolinas and there's Florida. The problem is I don't know anything about those areas. So I don't know if these were like A areas or B areas, but they were below loan value or at loan value.
Well, not those.
So cities. I would guess it would be like, you know, but I don't know. I don't even know what city.
Well, the top city is Houston.
Oh, I could see Houston. Houston's a good one because Houston was a benefit of all of the Texas migration. Not that they got the migration, but it was like a tide that lifted all the boats.
And then you think the other characteristic was totally there's a rapid pace of construction.
And there's also, and it also had a big hangover of insurance.
Yeah.
Probably the worst.
So one is Houston at 38% of multifamily loans in Houston are criticized. And second place is Phoenix, similar story, a little overbuilding. But what's interesting is Phoenix is at 18%. And yeah, Houston at 38% is pretty far out ahead of the pack.
Yeah.
In terms of having these loans.
Phoenix?
18%.
Oh, geez.
Of the multifamily loans are criticized.
Wow, that's impressive.
So,
Anyway,
so
that's
rough. It'll be interesting to see. So, I expect there probably will be some transacting or revaluation deals in Houston that will work out. So that.
But you know, the thing about Houston is that has been like, it's really been since Katrina. Like, there has been this constant holdover, like hangover effect in Houston for a while.
It doesn't suggest that Houston isn't going to improve for a while, unless you're buying it at below loan value.
Well, no, but from a fundamental standpoint, like I'm not saying we should do it, but like Houston actually like is, aside from the weather, which you know I would say in a number of levels is some of the worst in the country from a heat perspective because it's hot and humid and somehow stinks. But like it is. From a geographical perspective, it's got port, it's got energy,
it's got
industry,
it's got a lot of industry,
it's got diversity. I mean, it's got a lot of stuff going on there that, you know, Houston.
And they get a team in the playoffs in the NFL.
Oh, yeah, they already have one. It's a very good little team, I'd say. It's in a very interesting place. Anyways, go ahead, sorry.
Last thing I was going to bring up was, so the year-end results are in for this, our favorite, one of our favorite topics we talk about is this mansion tax in LA. So again, they were originally anticipating it to generate $900 million.
Just short of a billion. So they rounded up.
The final numbers for 2023 came out.
Wait, hold on. I think I wrongfully predicted something like $30 million last year, which I know I'm wrong in that.
You're totally wrong.
Okay, but I don't think it's within like. I don't think we even got to. I would guess we're not even within 30% of $900 million. I would guess we're not even like we're 70% off of $900 million.
Yeah,
70 to 80%. It's probably like in the $100 million range.
It is $142 million.
Okay, and that's probably just like Jay-Z's house.
that's the other interesting thing too, because it it's called mansion tax because originally it was aimed at. Mansions, right?
Right. So
that was the thinking.
That was marketing.
But it applies to
everything.
Apartments and commercials too. Commercial property too. In April, when it really started going, it basically all sales basically cratered.
Any sales, transactions. Yeah.
Yeah. I think. But then apparently in November we had a huge spike of sales, and the other interesting statistic is that. This projected revenue they were hoping to get, this 900 million, 38% of it was expected to be from single family home sales. So they were really hoping that the Jay-Z's house.
Really? 38%?
Yeah, they had expected the society. I found that kind of interesting. Well, I really thought they could get it. I would not have guessed that. They really thought they were going to get it from house sales.
Oh, that's insane. That means, wow.
And then of this 142 million.
But see, that's insane because if you expect 38% to be on single family home sales, that means you think that 38% of the transaction volume of home sales is going to be homes that are $5 million or more.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the, I guess, these reality shows like Selling Sunset, constantly talk about this mansion tax.
I didn't read that. I saw the headline that they're but I would, yeah, imagine they're getting drenched on this.
So they talk about it a lot. So it's not happening. So out of the 142 million, 100 million, you can actually spend right away. It's been proof, or at least approved.
Right, it's going to be like 80 homes.
So like, it's not almost like just, 80, so, 80, so 50, 57 million, they said they're going to try to allocate it for construction of new affordable housing. But to me, it's tough because to me, 57 million, and they're trying to spread it out amongst 19 properties, and they think they'll generate 1,500 units from this. But and then the rest of where does the rest of the money go? It's 57. Where's the other 43 go?
God knows.
Goes to rental assistance for like tenants facing eviction from now the COVID assistance and all that. It's all gone. But any other kind of rental assistance, homelessness programs, other things like that. That's where that money is going. But you know, other cities are watching this. They say that Santa Fe, New Mexico, Chicago, and Seattle are thinking about copying LA.
Yeah.
Even though it is far missed its mark by far. So.
It's so funny because like there's not a month that goes by that I don't hear something about how this is going to get removed, and then the next month comes and it's still there.
I think the thing that's coming up is there's some referendum. I don't know when.
No, I know there is. I think it's a March referendum.
Just like they say how everyone needs to kumbaya coalesce around the office market, all the participants like. Those real estate guys really should call us and get this removed.
Yeah. That's one of the most surprising things. I talked to so many brokers. I'm like, how do you even pay your rent, dude? Like, how does this work? Like, yeah. This has got to be awful.
The apartment association, the brokers, the ULI. I don't know why.
I talked to one guy last 2 weeks ago. This guy was a hungry fella. Called me, and I'm like, hey, I'm on a trip. He's like, well, this is a good time. Okay, let's chat. And he's like, yeah, we're like the number two multifamily broker in LA. I'm like, Jesus Christ, really? He's like, yeah. And I was like, how many deals did you do? We did 19 deals. I'm like, wow, that is impressive. 19 deals, huh? And I was like, so 19 deals, like, what's the deal price? And he's like, well, they're like, you know, 1 to 3, 1 to 4 million. I'm like, oh, okay, you're below Mansion Tax. So I was like, how do these people sell that in like a few years, like when they have some real appreciation? Oh, we'll figure that out then. But I was like, what is your like deal volume? Like, what are we talking about here? I'm not sure all these deals work. Like, what's your total? Oh, he's like, oh yeah, it's like 75 million. I'm like, really? 75 million, huh? He's like, yeah. I was like, dude, you know that's like 3 deals in Dallas, right? Like, no mansion tax. You just gotta like get to a 5 cap and you can probably do that. Yeah. He's like, I think that way. And then our little conversation ended. No. It was sad for me. He was all happy. I was like, man, that's impressive. He's like, oh, yeah, I can do something for you too. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know about that. But I was like, yeah, that's a lot of work he did there.
Yeah, it's tough. LA's a tough market. We'll continue to be so.
Until we get this
tax
rate. I don't know. But we may not. I mean, there's a very good possibility that, like, the one thing that most people missed on this tax, specifically, Karen and all her friends up there, is that this is a holder's market. And you just gave holders a lot more reason to hold. Yeah. good luck. Anyways, let's do some fun shit. So, okay, what's your content?
So my content...
I heard a lot about your content last few days. Like, I don't know if you want to share that
this
one.
Past weekend was... past weekend with Golden Globes.
Ah, yes.
And I kept hearing about the names of different movies, and so... Out of curiosity, I noticed Amazon Prime had this movie called Saltburn on, and I thought, all right, let me see what these fancy reporters of the Foreign Press,
Foreign
Correspondents Association, whatever they're called,
so
what they're watching and see that they thought was hot was a quality movie.
Yes,
let's see if I find it interesting. And is
Truth Be Found?
It is interesting. It had a little bit of a murder mystery spin to it at the end. But okay. It was not your normal movie.
No.
So there was an underlay of I don't even know how to describe it appropriately.
Yeah. Well, it was a unique movie. How about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't. It's definitely not a movie I would recommend.
But I think what I do get from what you told me, it was a story that had some twists, and it was actually a well done movie for its sort of place.
Correct. Correct. But there is some odd sexuality in it. So,
yes.
It's depending on your values, if you're somewhat conservative,
It's not for the conservative set.
You should stay away from this movie.
Yes. Yeah. It definitely. You know, toes the line.
There's some sexual themes to it that are you need to be fairly liberal.
Yes.
to appreciate.
About
yourself? What did you watch?
I watched this movie, Self-Reliance. It was on Hulu, and it's about a guy who he is like the funny guy in most of these shows. He was like on
the comedian,
the League. He's like a comedian type of fellow, okay. But he plays like a very serious role. And he's starring opposite Anna Kendrick. And basically, they're like he enters this game where for 30 days, if he's not in the presence of somebody like in close proximity, he can be killed.
Oh,
and he's just running from like danger for like 30 days.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was, you know, it was good. It's not something I would have thought would be, but it was well done. There's some, you know, interesting people, and it was relatively funny, a little dark, but it's good. Any upgrades?
Upgrades or food?
Upgrades or food or both?
Or both. No upgrades. The only thing on the food side that was interesting was I went to this dim sum restaurant called Lunasia.
Lunasia. Yes,
And there's a Lunasia in a town called Alhambra.
Yes, I think it's the same thing.
Same owners.
Yeah.
But I've waited a little bit at the Lunasia in Alhambra. They're about the same size, but the Pasadena one, it was just like a 50-minute line. And what was
weird,
but it was, you know, it had
because they have a little order, like a little thing.
And they had the little, you know, kiosk, get your little print thing.
Yeah,
and
then
they call you on your phone and everything. You can check in online, see how you are. And we kept watching, 9 minutes, 7 minutes, you know, till you're served. But then, and it's one of these dim sum restaurants that it's not like the old style dim sum where people come around and push the carts.
You order and then there's a
little scan.
Yeah, I've been
pick
there.
It and you pick it out. And they actually had a decent app though on the phone, but to do that. But food was okay.
People like that place a lot.
But it was just an interesting crowd because it was mainly non-Asian.
Oh, it's very non-Asian. Yeah,
And I was just surprised. Like, God, everyone's waiting like this long because it wasn't. The quality of food wasn't that good that I would have waited to justify that kind of wait. And what was a little disturbing too was when we got our table, there's still a lot of empty tables. I guess they just didn't have enough service staff. And so they were just, you know, making people wait to, you know, so that they could manage it better.
God.
So that was a little disturbing. Usually in a lot of these kind of dim sum restaurants, especially at a holiday, you know, the place is packed, every table is used, and that's why there's still a line. Here it was like there were a number of empty tables, but it was still, the rest of it was full. It was like 90% full. But I'm just surprised that they didn't fill up that 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the service was a little. They were a little unruly. I think they gave away, or at least I thought they gave away our food to another table at one point.
Yeah.
So, of course, I complained.
The adventures of food with Pong.
So that's my little upgrade. Lunasia in Pasadena. Don't go unless you have time to wait.
Unless you have a lot of time to wait.
Unless you have time to wait.
I didn't have a food one this week. I did upgrade. I don't have a really upgrade this week either. No
clothes, no new?
No, nothing really. Nothing I can
think
of. I got my usual haircut. That's you know. No, it's a pretty light week for me. Nothing
birthday
really.
Parties,
no, birthday. No, I went to a great birthday party. They had the full In-N-Out truck.
It
was a place that like we've been to a number of times for birthdays because it's like one of these kids. But my buddy rented out the whole In-N-Out truck, and like it's like a place that like does like 10 birthday parties in a day. And so then the In-N-Out truck rolled up, and then there was like all these kids. Guys, we got there early, so I wanted to go early. So we got there early, and all these kids were coming out of the birthday. And like, the In-N-Out truck's here, but it wasn't for their party.
It wasn't for their party.
They're all sad. Even the adults were like, this is fantastic. And I was like, it's for the next party.
Yeah,
but it was actually, my buddy rented out the whole place. I've never
I've only been there when there's like three other parties, and so it's like smushed with all the people.
It's a truck. It's a food truck.
It's a food truck, but then it's next to like a play zone. You know, it's got the trampolines and all the stuff the kids play on.
Who owns actually that? Because it's because
In-N-Out truck.
Because In-N-Out is a franchise, right?
In-N-Out. No, In-N-Out's all
corporate owned, right? So then this is a is the corporate.
It's a corporate owned, and in fact, I want to ask my buddy. They didn't have the French fries. They were just giving out chips. So there's something there's something to do with that. Like you have to get a different type of In-N-Out truck to have the deep fryer. That's what it was. I didn't get a chance to ask.
Because you know me, I love my potatoes.
Oh, I don't know. You would have been upset. But they have, because I think it's like another level. Yeah,
it's another level. I guess and it's time, too.
Yeah, it's probably time. Yeah, because it was like all fresh and made. So this is good. It's amazing, actually.
Wait, so what did Cy?
Oh, they all grilled cheeses and stuff. They loved it.
Oh, they just had a grilled cheese there? You have the hamburger?
Yeah, you just get grilled cheese. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, you can. That's what the vegetarians get.
I thought they did some animal style.
They just get grilled cheese. All right, folks, that does it for us. Thank you, everyone. We will be back next week. Talk to you soon. Bye.